when the replay official did not stop the game?
I'm not going to comment on that. I'll get fined for the rest of my life if I get commented on that.
We had a great belief in our locker room. We didn't have to do anything special, just be us. I was so proud of this team. We had so much fun, it ought to be illegal.
Coach Carousel talk, is that something you just ignore?
Yeah, you ignore, because one week you're getting fired and the next week you're going to take another job, and I'm worried about the darn SEC West Championship. And so, yes, to answer your question.
Our purpose is to win, make no mistake about it, but it's to win the right way. And our goal, our stated goal, is going to be to win the SEC East.
That's iron sharpening iron. That's the way this thing's got to work, man. We got to know and understand that it's got to be about competition.
Talk about the reception you received from the fan base. Did you ever think you'd be kissing and hugging babies at the tarmac when you got off the plane?
A lot better than another tarmac experience that I had. I didn't think of that. It was like an anniversary or something like that.
We're coming. We're coming. And we ain't backing down.
It's time for Carolina football. So get the fuck out of your seats. Spurs up.
Welcome in the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin, Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Hey, man, just living life over here. Got a great interview lined up for the show, so I'm looking forward to that. I think our Gamecock followers are really going to appreciate it, and just people that don't really know anything about Shane Beamer, I think they'll get something out of it as well. So, hey, this is going to be a good episode, buddy. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Can you imagine being a South Carolina fan right now? It's like Christmas. And you know, when you were a kid and there was a big couple of presents under the tree, and your imagination's running wild. You don't know what the hell's in there. You're hoping it's great. You're hoping it's something you wanted. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They all got that feeling right now.
Dude, it's all gravy right now in Columbia. He's going to be the only coach that's undefeated.
That's right.
Heading into the 2021 season. So
never lost a save.
Well, speaking of saving, let's start right there, Shane. I just wanted to throw this at you real quick because there's an early line out for the SEC championship game. I know Alabama and Arkansas still have to play, as well as Florida and LSU. But we got an early line, Shane. Bama. Favorite. Can you take a guess what you think the line might be?
Bama favored by 14 and a half.
Oh, somebody saw it already, because that's exactly what
no
the line
way.
Is.
Dude, I swear, I did not, man. I did not. I'm on my game.
Oh,
is it really 14 and a half?
Yes, sir. That's dead on. That's the first line I've seen of it. And I saw that Wednesday morning. Of course, we're recording on Wednesday, but yeah.
Wait, did you tweet it?
I did, yeah.
Okay. Now, 100% honest here. Subliminally, I have your notifications on. So maybe I saw it and didn't think anything of it, but that number is fresh in my mind. So, okay, I might have cheated on that one.
Well, hey, we got plenty of time. You know, I'm kind of already leaning one way, but I want to save that. I don't want to give away. Yeah, it's still early. That's probably not even going to be the official line. It might move some. So we'll get to that game when we get to it. But I just wanted to throw that out there. And, you know, if the listeners out there, head on over to my bookie, whatever, and bet that up if you're feeling good about it right now. Because I bet that line will probably change by a point or two by next week.
Definitely.
All right. One other thing I wanted to throw at you here, Shane, before we get to our interview. But, you know, one of the awards given out annually by the college football. It's actually an organization out of Fayetteville, I believe, or it's either Fayetteville or Little Rock. I apologize for not knowing which. Might actually be Little Rock, but the Frank Broyles Award, named after the famed Arkansas coach, and he just had such a strong track record of hiring assistant coaches that the nation's top assistant coach award, named after the great Frank Broyles. And we got a bunch of guys from the SEC nominated as Assistant Coach of the Year. I'm going to run down this list real quick, Shane. We got 10 guys on it.
Okay.
Steve Sarkisian, Alabama offensive coordinator. Barry Odom, defensive coordinator at Arkansas. Larry Porter, special teams coordinator for Auburn. Brian Johnson, the offensive coordinator and quarterback coach for Florida. Dan Lanning, defensive coordinator, Georgia. John Schlerman, the late John Schlerman, prayers up to him, the Kentucky offensive line coach. Zach Arnett, Mississippi State defensive line, defensive coordinator. Marcus Johnson, the Missouri offensive line coach. Jeff Lebby, Ole Miss offensive coordinator. And last but certainly not least, Mike Elko, Texas A&M defensive coordinator. Thoughts on that list, Shane?
Golly, man, how do you pick? You know, I mean, I'm looking at the list and it's like, oh, yeah, clearly that guy. But then you read another name, you're like, well, it's pretty impressive what he's done down there, you know. So
right.
that's a tough list, man. I'm glad I don't have to vote on that.
Now, I thought, last thing on this list, I was going to rank, we still got a couple games left, but I'm going to throw out my top five. How's that sound, Shane?
Okay, and I'll judge it.
And I'm sure I'm going to get ripped for these. You know, the fact of the matter is, if you're on this list, you've done an outstanding job, and I'm not discrediting anything these guys have done. They've all done outstanding. So, again, I'm not saying any of these guys are bad coaches, but, you know, there's got to be a winner. And I'm going to go number five, Jeff Lebby, Ole Miss offensive coordinator. Everybody's given Lane Kiffin, you know, they always give him all the credit. And that's not to say he's, you know, certainly he's done a great job, but he turns this thing over to his coordinator. So Jeff Lebby's the one calling the plays at Ole Miss. And, I mean, they're night and day different from what they were last year with, Rich Rod. They were running it primarily. Now they can do a little bit of both, but Matt Corral and those Elijah Moore, I mean, we're talking potential All-Americans here. So Jeff Lebby, number five on my list.
I like that. I thought Lebby would be a little bit higher on your list just because, like you said, what they've been able to do with what they have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with it. Top five, definitely.
Okay, number four on my list, Shane, Mike Elko, Texas A&M defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember now, they've got a lot of young guys in the secondary. They did give up some big plays against Alabama and Florida, but they've rebounded nicely. They had one of their upperclassmen who was a two-year starter opt out in training camp. So they've had some losses here. They lost, a second-round pick on the defensive line. Yet this Texas A&M defensive front is, maybe the best in the SEC this year. So
yeah,
I think for all the we all talk up Kellen Bond and Jimbo and the running game, which the running game has been outstanding. But outside of the offensive line, I think the best thing I've seen from Texas A&M this year is the defense. So I got to give Elko some love there.
Absolutely, man. In fact, I would have had him a little bit higher. Just kind of the same thing, man. Going into the season with everything that was going on, we thought Texas A&M was crumbling there for a little bit, mainly on the defensive side of the ball. And what he's been able to do has just been flat out impressive. Number one, aren't they the number one defense in the SEC right now?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'd have him a little higher, but definitely top five.
All right, number three on my list, Shane. Steve Sarkisian, Alabama offensive coordinator. And I think some people are going to be mad that he's even this low, but, it's nothing against him. I called him out. I didn't think he was doing, I didn't necessarily think he was bad, but I just thought he had all this talent. They had to replace Tua and all these NFL receivers. And, hey, it's looking just as good, if not better. And there's been no drop-off since Jalen Waddle got hurt. Mac Jones, legitimate Heisman contender. He might even win the award. So, yeah, I got to give Steve Sarkisian all the credit in the world. And he may even win this thing, but I've got him number three on my list.
And I have him a little bit lower, Mike. And the only reason that because I still think he's a top five myself. But, Alabama's, we've always said it has been a plug-and-play coordinator. And next thing you know, they're getting a head coaching job somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But what Steve has been able to do from last year to this year, clearly shows some coaching going on behind the scenes, not just talent that's sitting down there in Tuscaloosa. So definitely top five. And like you said, wouldn't be surprised if he wins this award.
All right, number two on my list, Shane, Zach Arnett, Mississippi State defensive coordinator. I don't think the Bulldogs are getting enough respect for what they've been doing on that side of the ball. Hell, it was just a couple weeks ago they limited Georgia to, what was it, 6 rushing yards.
Uh-huh.
And I guarantee you, Shane, every single player on that Mississippi State defense was probably 3 stars less than the guys they were going up against Georgia. And it's not just that one game. It's across the board. I mean, there was a game where, you know, the offense literally did not score. The defense scored the only points of the game. There's been other games where they're scoring as many points as the offense. We all know the offense has been struggling at Mississippi State. And, you know, the sad thing is if this offense would have been as – didn't even have to light the world on fire, but if they were just basically what we thought they would be, Mississippi State may be in contention for the SEC West right now, but that defense has propped them up, and I got to give Zach Arnett all the credit in the world because I don't even think he's got that much talent to work with, yet he's turned this into one of the better defenses in the SEC.
Yeah, for sure, man. I wouldn't have him on my list, believe it or not, but you are right. There are some things that has gone right down there at Mississippi State, and the defensive side has been it. So I say he's good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he's a terrible coordinator or anything like that, but I like some of these other guys. I'm just a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. All right, my winner here, Shane, number one, I think this guy deserves to win the Broyles Award, Barry Odom, defensive coordinator, Arkansas. I know, I've already seen some fans are already upset because they allowed Missouri to score on them and go down the field, win that game. But my God, we got to remember where we were at with Arkansas. This was just a couple months ago. Everyone was not even in pencil, but in ink. Arkansas, 0-10.
Right.
This is the toughest. Remember, the AD came out and said this is the toughest schedule in college football history. It's kind of like we've forgotten all that. We've got a walk-on at corner. We've got a former walk-on at linebacker. They just don't have much depth and talent, and yet they've pieced this thing together. This was the guy, remember, it was Mike Leach came into the SEC and just went rampant on LSU, and we all thought, damn, Mississippi State's going to be a damn force. Barry Odom figured that thing out, and everyone's just copied that blueprint. He figured out the Jeff Lebby Ole Miss offense and forced Matt Corral into 6 interceptions. Barry Odom, coach of the year, no question. And to me, you give this award to someone that's elevated not only his unit but the entire team. And there's just no convincing me that Barry Odom has or any coach has done that better than Barry Odom this year in the SEC.
So he's the guy, huh? Out of everybody on this list, that's the guy that's changed the program the most. In your opinion,
Shane, last year this defense gave up 45 to Western Kentucky. They gave up 56 to LSU, 48 to Alabama, 51 to Auburn. They gave up 31 to San Jose State, 34 to Colorado State. I mean, this is the coaching job of the year right here.
I gave up about $300 betting on them last year, so. I'm with you, man. I really like what he's done there in Arkansas. If the season would have ended halfway through, I think it would have been a no-brainer. You know, some of these guys I think are going to creep up into discussion, you know, when they call this award. But very, very deserving, Coach Odom, what he's been able to do there with the Razorbacks.
All right, buddy. So we spieled long enough here. Let's get to our interview with Keith Alsap of the Locked On Gamecocks podcast. I think the fans are really going to appreciate this. And again, you can follow Keith at KALLSEP and also follow at Gamecock Pod. That's the handle for the Locked On Gamecocks podcast. And this information will be in the show notes as well. So let's kick it over to Keith. Hey, we're pleased to be joined now by Keith Alsap of the Locked On Gamecock podcast, the go-to source for Carolina sports in podcast form. You can follow him at K Alsep, that's A-L-L-S-E-P on Twitter, and the podcast is at Gamecock Pod. Keith, thanks so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on with you. I've enjoyed having you on my show a couple of times, and it's just an honor to be on that SEC podcast.
Well, let's get rolling, man, because this is a busy time for South Carolina. We just hired Shane Beamer, and of course, we're going to go deep dive on that. But before we get into all that, I wanted to ask you real quick, any chance that you think South Carolina will play in a bowl game this year?
I think if they get invited, they're definitely playing in a bowl game. And I don't know if I'm going to go, but I'm going to buy some merchandise just so I will have a record of South Carolina playing in a bowl game with a 2-8 record. Never happened to anybody in the history of college football.
Would they? I mean, would they even have the roster and the coaching staff to make that happen?
Well, I think so. Two coaches have departed the coaching staff that we know of, Travaris Robinson and Kyle Krantz. Shane Beamer has not officially named anyone to his staff, but I think there's two or three guys that definitely will be on the staff. But he's kind of asked, you know, some guys to hang loose. And, you know, if you go to a bowl game, coaches get a nice bowl bonus, which they all like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd be great for South Carolina. I do think they would get some guys back that had some, you know, not season-ending injuries. They had several guys that were on COVID that potentially could be back. You know, I was talking about this Tuesday night, well, I guess last night on my podcast, up until Will Muschamp got fired, they had done maybe as good a job or better than almost anybody in college football as far as COVID protocols and testing negative for COVID. And I think after he was fired and after they saw the season slip away, I think, you know, some guys kind of took some liberties that they had not been taking, and that led to, you know, obviously a roster reduction on top of the opt-outs that you had after Will Muschamp was fired. And if they could get those guys back on board and get those guys healthy, then, you know, I think it would be great for the young players, because there are a lot of young, talented players on the roster. And it would be good for Shane Beamer to be able to watch those guys practice and to be able to evaluate his players, to be able to be around his players. And, you know, number one, you got to re-recruit your own roster, whether you're a new coach or a returning coach, because of the transfer portal thing that's coming. And then it also gives him an opportunity to evaluate coaches that maybe, you know, he's considering, but hadn't made a hard yes or a hard no decision on. So I think it would be nothing but beneficial for South Carolina. And if there is a slot in the SEC openings, I'm confident that South Carolina will accept an invitation to a bowl game.
Well, hopefully Shane Beamer is not with Oklahoma at that time, as we know he's splitting his time there. So, you know, big question there in South Carolina. Let's just start there. Shane Beamer hired. Thoughts on that decision and how Ray Tanner and Bob Caslin, how they handled this coaching search?
Well, number one, I think they handled the coaching search as far as keeping it away from the politicians and the board of trustees, and something that's really never been done before at South Carolina, and kind of kept it, you know, Bob Caslin's a retired lieutenant general in the Army, and so he kind of closed ranks, so to speak. And it was a three-person deal, and nobody from the Board of Trustees was involved.
Hmm.
And, you know, some of them didn't like that. If you know the history of the University of South Carolina, the board, which are all, you know, political appointees by the legislature, are very involved, and a lot of times they think they're the decision-making body, but they're supposed to be the advise and consent body. And so I thought they did a good job for that. I mean, I said, you know, for me personally, and I think a lot of South Carolina fans, they wanted someone with head coaching experience. Obviously, Matt Campbell was a guy that Ray Tanner and Bob Caslin made tell them no several times. You know, maybe if he's 6-4 instead of probably going to the Big 12 championship game, maybe that could have gone a little bit further down the road. But I think he's probably either going to get a big contract extension there, or maybe parlay that job into the Michigan job, or perhaps the Texas job, or, you know, some people say even the NFL. And so then you had Scott Satterfield and Billy Napier, and neither one of them were as impressive, according to my sources in the interview process, as Shane Beamer. And Shane Beamer internally did have a lot of support from his time at South Carolina. A lot of people were very impressed with him, and he has done a tremendous job networking and staying in touch. And he also had, you know, every one of those great players, when Steve Spurrier went on that great run from Connor Shaw to Marcus Lattimore to Stephon Gilmore, Devontae Holloman, Melvin Ingram, Torrey Gurley, DJ Swearinger, you know, you name it, those guys all stepped up and went to bat for Shane Beamer and a lot of players that came before them as well. So he had a lot of internal support for the job and put forth a great plan. I mean, to me, I would have preferred someone with head coaching experience, because I think the SEC has not been kind to first-time head coaches.
Yeah, I think you're dead on with that one. So do you think the fact that, you know, I'm sure you saw it, but Ben Briner of the State just reported that South Carolina's got to owe the complete buyout, the way his contract, Will Muschamp, that is, his previous contract is. So do you think finances played into this at all and trying to get Shane Beamer, you know, you kind of referenced it there, they kind of got him on the cheap a little bit.
Well, so I guess the long and short answer is I don't believe finances played a factor. Ray Tanner had and Will Muschamp had negotiated a reduction on the buyout of over $2 million, and Ray Tanner forgot to sign it. And so, you know, the general's probably not going to be too pleased with that. But South Carolina, they knew they need to make a change. I mean, we all know that new TV contract with ABC and Disney is getting ready to kick in, and that's going to at least double the revenue for each SEC program. And they had some people step up and said, don't worry about the buyout and we're going to spare no expense, because you can't say, well, we're going to fire this guy and pay him 13 and now over $15 million, but we got to make a hire on the cheap. From what I was told, Shane Beamer took less money because for him, it's still a huge raise. I mean, I think get less than $600,000 a year at Oklahoma, $2.75 million, heavily laden with incentives per year for 5 years. But he wanted money for coordinators because he is a first-time head coach. He mentioned at the press conference he really wanted to hire, you know, coordinators that had done it for a long time at a high level. That was his quote. And so to get those guys, you're going to have to pay more money. You're probably going to have to overpay maybe to get a guy to leave the region or the school that they're in and come to South Carolina. And he also wants a bigger support staff. And he's going to have a new strength staff. We were fortunate enough to get that news first this morning that Paul Jackson and his staff had been let go, effective at the end of the year. And so there'll be a new strength coach and strength staff coming in with Shane Beamer.
Now, one interesting thing about Shane Beamer, because I hear you know, just what you said. I mean, the former players love him. Seems like a lot of fans love him. Great recruiter. He's got just an outstanding background when it, you know, for a guy that's not been a head coach. Hell, he's been all over the SEC and Oklahoma, and he's attached to all these great coaches. But, and I haven't been able to confirm this, so I wanted to ask you, because I heard this from someone that I trust, that Steve Spurrier basically ran him off. Shane Beamer, that is, at his time at South Carolina. Do you know anything about that? And what's the backstory there of why Shane Beamer left the first time around?
Well, there was a botched kickoff right before the half of the SEC championship game against Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some kind of miscommunication, and Auburn wound up getting the ball, I think, around the 40-yard line. And there was under 30 seconds to go, and Cam Newton made one play, and then they had a Hail Mary on the last play of the half, and they scored. And the head ball coach was none too happy. And according to sources, and you never know if they're right or wrong, basically the way it was relayed to me was, well, Shane, probably need to go work for your daddy. And then everybody told him what a big mistake that would be, and he called him back the next day and tried to apologize and get him to stay. And after Jadeveon Clowney signed on his birthday, which was Valentine's Day, Shane Beamer left and went to Virginia Tech to be with his dad for 5 years. And, you know, that had to be special for him. And then, you know, he wound up at Georgia and was on the staff that played for the national championship game. And then, you know, he said the only place he would have even considered leaving Georgia for was Oklahoma, and had learned that offense from Lincoln Riley. And when they got the 10th assistant, Lincoln Riley hired him. A lot of coaches in the SEC promoted somebody from their support staff and paid them a lower salary and kind of looked at it as, you know, a stepping stone type job to give another guy, you know, an opportunity. Lincoln Riley took an, you know, an established veteran assistant coach with his 10th, you know, assistant position.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems like the big question in Columbia now, who's his staff going to be? And, you know, before we get to that, I just want to ask you, I mean, does the fate of Shane Beamer's tenure there at South Carolina, does it rest in these two coordinator hires he's about to make, offense and defense?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at Will Muschamp and his tenure, I think you can trace the beginning of the end back to the decision to promote Brian McClendon to offensive coordinator. Will Muschamp took over a program that won 3 games. They won 6 games. Then the next year they won 9 games. And even Mike Bianchi was writing great stories about Will Muschamp then. And he had flipped the narrative of a guy that couldn't win at Florida, that was a great fit at South Carolina, and was the same guy that was the head coach in waiting at Texas. And because of one half of football, he chose to promote Brian McClendon instead of pluck Eli Drinkwitz away from NC State. And Drinkwitz was going to come. And, you know, not only from an offensive coordinator standpoint, but wide receiver recruiting was just abysmal under Brian McClendon. And that led to, you know, that and Travaris Robinson fully turning over the defense to him instead of, you know, calling it himself. That's probably why he got fired. And at the end of the day, I think a guy like Shane Beamer, it's his first head coaching job. Every hire, not just the coordinators, but I think every hire is going to be critical. But in particular, the offensive and defensive coordinators, and then who he hires to be the strength coach, because your strength staff spends more time with the players than the coaching staff does, because they're around them year round, not just spring and fall practice.
Right. So You know, with that in mind, who are the ideal candidates? Either, you know, people you've heard or just people that you think are realistic for Shane Beamer to hire at those coordinator positions and strength staff?
Well, for me, I think, you know, he's already got the guy for offense on staff in Mike Bobo. He's a veteran play caller, one of the best play callers in the SEC. He's done it for a long time at a high level. He, you know, evolved at Georgia from an I formation team to when they had Aaron Murray and even Hudson Mason. They were, you know, shotgun spread over 90% of the time and putting up a lot of points and producing, you know, record-breaking offenses. I mean, it helped that he had like four NFL tailbacks at one time. But, you know, they were wide open. They scored a lot of points. He went to Colorado State and evolved even more out there. And then, you know, he comes to South Carolina and they're devoid of playmakers. And the one guy that they thought they had that was a playmaker tore his ACL the first week of fall camp, Marshawn Lloyd, a five-star tailback. And all of a sudden you figure out that Kevin Harris is really good. Mm-hmm. And he's really fast. And he rushed for over 1,100 yards. And, you know, they had to change their offense to go to I formation and old school football because – they really didn't have three or four wide receivers that anybody feared. They had one guy, Shy Smith, and, you know, he got a concussion and missed a couple of weeks. And, you know, against Ole Miss, they scored 42 points, and all of it was essentially because of Kevin Harris and DeShaun Fenwick and the ground game.
So, Mike Bobo is your offense. If Bobo stays around, who do you think they should get at defensive coordinator?
Man, that's a great question, Mike. I mean, I think, you know, ideally he would want somebody that's a veteran, somebody that's been very successful. One name that's been bandied about on Gamecock message boards is John Heacock at Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
It's a guy who's been a head coach. He's been in college coaching for 35 years. He's been a coordinator for a long time. And, you know, Iowa State is in the Big 12, and they actually play defense, which is kind of an anomaly for that league. And, you know, I think it would be a veteran, established defensive coordinator. I'm not saying that he's the only one. I'm sure there's a lot of guys, but – you know, I couldn't see it being a first-time coordinator on offense or defense. I think that's why the Garrett Riley talk, to me, it's kind of a non-starter. He's only been an offensive coordinator for 1 year, and that's for Sonny Dykes, is a guy who calls his own offense. And before that, he was the running backs coach at Appalachian State. I mean, there's not – I mean, I've said, you know, if I want a movie star, I want Mark Wahlberg. I don't want Donnie Wahlberg. And, you know, Garrett Riley is not Lincoln Riley. And, I mean, you know, he might could be a guy you could bring in and call him the coordinator, and Mike Bobo would be, you know, the assistant head coach in charge of offense. You know, when Shane Beamer was at South Carolina, Ellis Johnson was the assistant head coach in charge of defense, and Lorenzo Ward was the defensive coordinator. And Ellis called it. And Lorenzo Ward had the title to give him a multi-year contract and more money. I mean, maybe you could do something like that. He could coach inside receivers. They've got a fantastic running back coach, Des Kitchens, who really has done a tremendous job, was a very successful recruiting coordinator and running backs coach at NC State and with Bobby Johnson at Vanderbilt. He grew up about 30 miles west of Columbia, right off I-20 in Wagner, South Carolina, went to Wagner-Sally High School, played at Furman with Billy Napier. That's a guy a lot of Gamecock fans were kind of hoping would get that job. And so, you know, I think we'll just have to wait and see how it shakes out. Obviously, he's Shane Beamer's back in Norman, getting ready for their final two games. And right now he's probably on his phone and in front of a laptop on Zoom and probably chatting with somebody on an iPad all at the same time right now.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I just wanted to get your quick thoughts on that, because I saw, you know, some South Carolina fans not too happy with that decision to go back, but I don't really know what Shane Beamer could be doing in Columbia that he can't be doing in Norman for the Gamecocks right now. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I totally agree. I think most of those guys are either millennials or Gen Zs, and they don't remember. You know, for instance, when Brad Scott took the job at South Carolina, he stayed with Florida State because they were in the national championship. And, you know, Brad Scott got a lot more camera time than he probably ever got in his entire career at Florida State. And I think because of the Beamer name, I think Oklahoma the next 2 weeks, particularly if Tim Brando is doing one of those games on Fox, Shane Beamer is going to get a lot of camera time, and he's going to get, you know, he's going to be talked about on those broadcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, South Carolina, Justin King and his staff, they're going to be firing out those edits of whatever they've got to say.
No doubt. I mean, and they do a great job. But I mean, it's like you said, here's the thing. It would be different if this was an open evaluation period where he could have left the press conference and gone to high schools and gone in living rooms and had in-home visits and brought kids to campus. At that point, I think you're looking at a different deal. But because, you know, recruiting is closed down until April 15th at the earliest for all sports, there's nothing that he can't do. I mean, he met personally with about 50 players after the team meeting. He met with the rest of the players the next day. He met with all the coaches, a bunch of lettermen and former players came over, and he walked outside the building to meet with them. And, you know, there's really nothing that he can do there, because the players are going home. They're taking exams from home remotely. You know, if they reassemble for a bowl game, he'll probably be back by then. You know, if there's no bowl game, then, you know, I could see him potentially staying with Oklahoma, depending on, you know, what happens with their fortunes. You know, if it's just a bowl game, I don't know if he stays. If they were to somehow finagle their way back in the college football playoff, that could be a different story. But with everything on Zoom, you know, unless the team reassembles for bowl practice, he can do everything from Norman that he would be doing probably from a hotel room or, you know, the building that he can do from the comfort of his own home or his office. There in Lincoln, and or I'm sorry, not in Lincoln, in Norman with Lincoln Riley. And, you know, there could be a couple of recruits that maybe fell just below that Oklahoma offer list that Lincoln Riley might just be walking by Shane Beamer's office when he's on a Zoom call, and Lincoln Riley sticks his head in and says, "Oh, hey, man, I wish we could have had you at Oklahoma, but you know what? I see you talking to Shane. South Carolina would be a really great spot for you. He's going to do big things there." You never know how those things could play out. Time to time.
Well, speaking of recruiting, so this is kind of tied to what I wanted to ask you next, but do you think Connor Shaw has a place on Shane Beamer's staff? And if I'm not mistaken, when Shane Beamer met with the media with, you know, his opening press conference, I believe – the first player he referenced was Marcus Lattimore, and I think Connor Shaw was the second. So clearly he knows, you know, the importance of – he knows Shaw well. He knows what that what Connor Shaw means to South Carolina program. Do you think Connor Shaw sticks around, and does that impact Gunnar Stockton if Shaw and Bobo, I guess, if either one don't have a place on Shane Beamer's staff?
Well, I can tell you with 100% certainty, Connor Shaw will be on Shane Beamer's staff. Some people have said he'll probably have his pick of being on the field or off the field. The people I talk to, Mike, seem to think that Connor Shaw prefers to be in his off-the-field role because Connor Shaw loves being Connor Shaw, and I don't blame him. He's the winningest in school history. The boosters love him. You know, he's the toast of Columbia everywhere he goes. You know, if you go out onto the field and all of a sudden, you know, your team is losing and your position group's not performing well, then Connor Shaw, that kind of changes who Connor Shaw is with a lot of people. But I think he plays an invaluable role just being around the players and working that life skills program so well that he took over from Marcus Lattimore. And he loves being around the quarterbacks, and Mike Bobo lets him sit in the room. And then, you know, obviously he came on the field once Will Muschamp was fired. But I kind of think he'll be in his same role off the field. And I think he really thrives in that role, and I think that's really what he would prefer to do.
Now, for next season, what are the odds that Ryan Helinski's on this, still on the roster? And I ask that because, hell, we I don't know about you, but I've been pretty impressed by Luke Doty, particularly his debut. But I think once they got some film on him, maybe that was a little bit different story. But for whatever reason, Muschamps just rack up All-American after All-American at the quarterback position and never really developed them. And now we got a new coaching staff. Maybe we get better coaching there. And, you know, I know South Carolina fans know all about the quarterback talent that's on that roster, and they got two other committed that are really good. I mean, all of a sudden, all you need is a good quarterback and you're in contention. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on Helinski sticking around and maybe just the future of that position at South Carolina now that Muschamp's gone?
Well, I mean, I think honestly, it's a coin flip. I do know from the pictures of the team meeting, the guy sitting right down in front and center at that team meeting was Ryan Helinski. I'm told, you know, he obviously, you know, had a little difficulty with the playbook. I said it at the time, the biggest loser at South Carolina with spring practice getting cut short was Ryan Helinski, because at that time, Colin Hill was injured. He could not practice. He was in a rehabilitation process, and that was Ryan Helinski's time to really get a good base knowledge of that offense and be coached hard by Mike Bobo for 14 practices in the spring game. And, you know, they only got four or five practices in, and then you had the shutdown. And, you know, a complex playbook, and you got to do a lot of smoke and mirrors. You know, to me, it was no secret or no surprise that the guy that knows the playbook as well as Mike Bobo ended up being the starting quarterback to start the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I kind of equate that to, you know, I just hope Gamecock fans don't write off Helinski too soon. I equate it to last, what we saw with Matt Corral. Just, you know, he was recruited to Ole Miss under for Phil Longo, and then he had to play for Rich Rugg, totally mismatch. Now they get Kiffin in there. He's damn near All-American. So not saying Helinski's going to be an All-American, but whoever the coordinator is, maybe they get the most out of him. And they're both California quarterbacks, former All-American in high school. So, you know, I think it'd be a mistake to write him off. He could be your future.
No, I mean, I agree. I went to the All-American Bowl practice when Ryan Helinski and Cam Smith, two young guys at South Carolina, were in that game and was able to walk out on the field and stand behind him. And a friend of mine who's a high school coach had spoken with Dan Werner And he said, look, this kid, when he throws the ball, it just makes a different sound coming off his hand because he's got a big time arm and you could see it. And, you know, you even saw it as a true freshman, although he probably wasn't ready to play. And, you know, then he hurts his elbow and then he tears his meniscus and he's basically, you know, playing injured all year as a true freshman, and he really gutted it out. And I thought that showed a lot of courage and toughness. And, you know, things just didn't work out for him this year, but I'm with you. I would not write him off. And depending on the offense that Shane Beamer wants to run and the vision that can be relayed to Ryan Helensky, I mean, I could definitely see him sticking it out, you know, or if he doesn't think it's going to be a fit and they're going to be a lot more, you know, quarterback run game and things of that nature, like you would call for Luke Doty and a guy like Gunnar Stockton, then, you know, I could see him, you know, moving on to some place that could, you know, really utilize his talent.
All right. Last thing for you, Keith, before I get you out of here, just real quick, you know, you can go 60 seconds or less if you want. Just what are your expectations for South Carolina next season? And I know that's a tough one to even answer because there's so many things unknown, but just something you're looking forward to, I guess, with South Carolina.
Well, I think for me, the first thing is you want to see who the coaching staff is. You want to see who transfers out of the program. You want to see what they're able to salvage in recruiting and then who transfers in with Ernest Jones declaring for the draft. They got a big hole in that linebacker room. They were already low on numbers there. And so, you know, I just want to see, you know, what his vision is for the program. And then as we move into spring, what that looks like. And it probably won't be ideal in year one because, you know, you just don't have the wide receivers at South Carolina. There would have to be an immediate influx of talent there. And I just want to see what, you know, the core philosophy is on offense and defense and, you know, the staff and players that will be implementing that in year one.
All right, Keith, so I really do appreciate you hopping on with us here. And again, he's Keith Allsep of the Locked On Gamecocks podcast. You can follow him at KAllsep on Twitter. And you got to follow the Gamecock Pod also on Twitter. And follow, go head on over to his Patreon site. It's must information, breaking news with all Gamecock sports. So, Keith, thanks again. I really do appreciate it. Great information here.
Oh, hey, it was my pleasure. I feel like maybe I arrived today at SEC podcast. That's big time for me, but I definitely appreciate it and looking forward to having you back on my show on Friday. That'll be a treat for our patrons as well.
All right, Shane. So some great stuff there from Keith. I really appreciate once again, Keith Allsep of the Locked On Gamecocks podcast for hopping on the show. You can find his information in the show notes there. That's KAllsep and at Gamecock Pod, the go-to podcast for strictly Gamecock information. So just want to thank him for coming on and dropping some knowledge on us.
Abso-freaking-lutely, man. This is what the fans want to know what's going on. So why not bring the source that's really close to it?
All right, Shane. So, hey, we got a couple games to preview. You ready to go around the league?
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league.
My daughters said something about me wearing a visor and need to put on a hat because I'm getting bald. So I'm going to wear a hat from here on out.
I mean, if you look over the next 6 years, I think we played Miami 3 times, Florida State 6 times, South Florida 3 times, Mississippi State 1. So who's the SEC teams? You know, I mean, I think it's an injustice for the kids. We should mix those games up and you should, you know, play more teams from the West.
Why don't you start calling around and see if you can get somebody else to play us, and we'll play them. We'll play anybody you can get to play us.
At Louisiana, hold on a second.
Hey, guys! Hey! I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you.
All right, Shay. So with Texas A&M and Ole Miss being postponed, I think all of a sudden the game of the week here is Georgia-Missouri.
Yeah.
In Columbia, this cold weather game potentially here. Missouri's red hot. Georgia, you could kind of say the same thing, but you know, with them missing a game, who knows? They might have cooled off a little bit, where Missouri is just heating up at the perfect time, getting momentum, heading into the bowl season and whatnot. And don't look now, Shane, but if Missouri finds a way to win this game at home, they're going to finish as number two in the SEC East. Who could have predicted that? I think even the most diehard Missouri fans wouldn't thought that was even possible this year. Do you think?
No, but man, what a damn resume Eli's putting up year one, and where we're even talking about this being potentially a ball game. You know what I'm saying?
Right, absolutely. So this is his case here. You know, I called it already, co-coach of the year.
Yeah.
He's going to win it if he wins this game. And hell,
for sure.
He may even win it without it. I'm not trying to put pressure on him. Not that he's sitting here listening to the show. But yeah, I just think, with JT Daniels and Georgia's balance that we've seen, of course, you know, it's been one game passing, one game rushing. So if they could put that all together, I mean, they could be dominant on that offensive side of the ball. But the big thing with Georgia here lately is just, you know, I know they've had injuries. I know they've had issues on the defensive side of the ball, but this defense is just not what it's been cracked up to be. And that's something Kirby addressed this week. Let's kick it over to him, talking about Dan Lanning and how they're handling the adversity and trying to slow down this Missouri offense that has all the momentum in the world heading into this one.
Kirby, I wanted to ask you, last season, Dan Lanning, his first year as defensive coordinator, was pretty consistent showing from the defense, I guess with the exception of the LSU game. More challenging, obviously, this year. How has he handled that with the guys on defense, and what have you seen from him as far as, you know, facing adversity for his guys?
He hits it head on. You know, he addresses it like any great coach would. I mean, as a young coordinator, you go through that and you own up to things that you could do better, and you confront and demand things that the players could do better. But we're never going to be a program or staff that points blame at players. That's not what we're about. We go back to work, and we try to find a better way to do it. And that's what he's done. You know, he's really good at what he does. He's a great motivator. He's a great leader. He's got a really good defensive staff here. So it's not just Dan. We got about seven or eight guys over there that work really hard at getting information, relationships with players, motivating players, finding new ideas, finding new schemes other people are doing. And Dan benefits from that staff. But he's the face, and he's the leader of that group, stands in front of them, and he takes ownership when he needs to take ownership, and he challenges when he needs to challenge.
Kirby, looking at Missouri's offensive numbers, you mentioned their quarterback the other day. What are they doing right now that's made them so effective on this, I guess I'd say, an offensive tear they've been on with, you know, with all the points they've been scoring lately?
Well, the quarterback's very accurate. He throws a really catchable ball. I mean, I've been extremely impressed with this guy's composure, poise, and he's going to be there for a while. He's young, and he knows coverages. As soon as he sees a coverage, he knows where to go with the ball. So, you know, he throws a really good deep ball. So when you play contested press man all over the field, he makes throws and they make 50-50 catches. When you play a zone and you spot drop all over, he knows where to go with the ball, and he completes it. And he's got a really good balanced run game to go with it. And part of being a quarterback is being a good decision makers. Eli and them do a great job of run pass conflicts where they're, you know, there's a rocket guy that he can hand it to, or he can throw it to, and then he can hand it off. Well, if you're not in the perfect call, then they can get you here, they can get you there. And they're tough to defend. And he's going to be great for our league, because when you look at what he does, there'll be people copycatting what he does. To add that to their offense, because his history at App State was that. His history at NC State was that. He was really good at creating offense.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, who do you give the edge to? I know Georgia's certainly got the talent advantage, but when you're looking specifically at Georgia's defense, which is banged up and not been playing too well outside of, of course, they dominated South Carolina, but just about everybody is at the moment.
Yeah.
And Missouri's offense, which, like I said, just put up 50 on the guy that I gave Defensive Coordinator of the Year to. I don't know, which side do you favor in this matchup?
Well, obviously, I just think there's way too much talent right now in Georgia. But, you know, Mizzou, what they offer is something that Georgia's not had in a while. That's just a team that can load up points, man, and do enough on defense. So, you know, we've not had to see Georgia go toe-to-toe in a shootout in a long, long time, you know. And last time they did it, they were unsuccessful. So that, I think that's the key is, like you said, even though there's injuries, if Georgia cannot slow down, you know, the Mizzou's offense, then this has potential. I mean, all it takes is one or two drives and one or two mistakes, and you're down a couple scores. So, yeah, I think Mizzou, they have nothing to lose, man. Georgia's the one that has everything to lose. They're trying to sell us that they still are a top-tier program. So, Mizzou, if win, lose, or draw, they'll be fine. They're still going to be happy with their schedule. But, I mean, that kind of makes you scary, too, when you've got, you know, there's nothing to worry about. You know, I don't expect conservative play calling from Coach Eli here. I expect them to be going for it on fourth down. Wouldn't surprise me if you see an onside kick in this game. Just anything and everything to create that competition, that competitive edge, so that you can knock off a team like the Georgia Bulldogs, because this is their national championship, baby.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's skip it on down to Columbia, the other side of this matchup, where Coach Strickowitz talked about his emerging quarterback, Connor Bazelak, on Georgia's balance now that JT Daniels is in the lineup, what he's seeing from that quarterback. And then on, you know, trying to build a championship program here at Missouri. And I like the fact that he's putting it on everybody, the alumni, the boosters, the players, himself. It's got to be an all-in effort. And I think the fact that he's putting that out there and recognizes it, I think that, again, goes to show, you know, Missouri just killed it with this hire.
Coach, Connor mentioned after the Arkansas game a message that's in the quarterback room about not needing to be a celebrity quarterback but being a battlefield leader. And I'm curious how you feel like he has embraced that role and if it kind of fits his personality naturally.
Yeah. You know, we have our quarterback commandments and that's absolutely one. We don't need celebrity quarterbacks. We need battlefield commanders that when the game's on the line, they're calm, cold, collected, and people will follow him. And that's exactly what he does. He doesn't get too high, too low. He's got a quiet confidence about him. And he's in control out there. He knows what he's supposed to do. And when he messes up, he owns it and goes back out there and corrects it.
Eli, you mentioned Georgia doing a little bit more with their passing game. Obviously, the foundation of that offense has been the running game for a while. I'm curious, what do they do that's so successful in that area, and just how important is it to stop Georgia on the ground to have a chance against them anytime you're lining up against them?
Yeah, well, you know, Coach Monken spent the previous, you know, 4 or 5 years maybe in the NFL, and you can see a lot of that flavor as far as motions, play actions, you know, divider reads by the X and Z receiver. And so, you know, I think they do a great job of stretching the field vertically, taking free access. JT Daniels obviously has pretty good command of when they go in motion, does it soften the coverage? Does it allow him to create a one-on-one? Does he need to hand the ball off? Does he need to check to something quick? And so it's dynamic for sure. Obviously, if you can stop the run and put him in a situation to pass, we have the ability to better disguise what we're trying to do on defense. So that's the cat and mouse game. But I think the reason why it's been so successful, I think, is no doubt because of Coach Monken and his NFL influence.
Yeah. What have you seen a little more out of Daniels since he took over? And is this offense with him a different challenge than it would have been when you were supposed to play them, whatever it was, 4 or 5 weeks ago?
I'm not sure that I remember the first question, but is it a different challenge? Yeah, it's a different challenge because anytime you have a new quarterback who's got game experience underneath him, then there's going to be a challenge to figuring out how to stop him. You know, one of the benefits of film is that you get to see other people try things and figure out, okay, that gives them problems, that doesn't give them problems. This fits into our scheme. And there's just not a lot of tape on JT. We know he's a tremendous talented quarterback. So we'll have to hunt and peck and make in-game adjustments until we figure it out.
Coach, kind of a follow-up to what Dave Matter asked earlier about being the one-year anniversary and
the program building. I think you mentioned about the indoor facility boosters and the state, right? Obviously, it's a kind of a group effort, a statewide effort with everything you need to do. You're knocking on the door of being in the top 25 as well. How it's always chicken or egg, right? Like win and we'll get you the facilities. We'll give you the facilities and we'll win. How do you see that symbiotic relationship working and how do you make it as strong as possible so it's a benefit for both sides?
I've always believed that minimum input equals minimum output. Maximum input always equals maximum output. And so I think you have to put in and you'll get out. I also believe that champions behave like champions long before they're champions. I believe there's a winning standard of performance. And you have to have that kind of expectations. I mean, we can sit here and have motivational quotes all day. You live up or down to the expectations that you set for yourself. You know, I've been adamant about since the day I stepped foot on this job that our goal is to win the SEC East in a bowl game with class integrity and academic excellence, and I'm not going to come off of it. In order to do that, we need the facilities that match the rest of the SEC. We need to recruit at a high level that matches the rest of the SEC. We need to recruit our state better than anybody else. And so we don't let Big Ten teams or Big 12 teams or PAC whatever teams come into our state. We have to secure those borders. And we're in the process of doing that. Have we finalized that yet? Nope. But we're doing our part. And now we need everybody else to believe and buy into the vision. And that's what I said we would try to do, which is extend an invitation to anybody and everybody who wants to be a part of what New Zoo is and ask them to join with us. And I firmly believe that if we all push in the same direction as the only Division I school in the state that has two large metropolitan areas, that has a great recruiting base, we can do what no one expects out of us to do in this league. But they're not going to make room for us. Nobody else in the SEC wants to see us do that, because then that crowds their table. We're going to have to do it ourselves, and I need everybody to join in that mission. And I think our administration's believing in that message. I know our team is, and I know recruits are. So now we need, everybody else, and that's going to require an investment. And like I said, minimum input equals minimum output. Maximum input equals maximum output. So that's my spiel.
All right, Shane. So, it's kind of like you were saying. I mean, this is their Super Bowl. They've lined up for this thing to, be a huge, huge game, the biggest game of the season, coming down late. And everything's just lining up perfectly. Missouri's going to be an underdog. I think they love that. That's right where they want to be, going against a Georgia team that, yeah, they've had 2 weeks to prepare, but not for this game necessarily. They were, getting ready for Missouri for much of last week. So, I don't know if that's going to be too much of an advantage outside of getting some rest. And I think the fact that Missouri is coming off a win.
Yeah.
I think this favors the Tigers in a lot of ways.
Coach Eli said a lot of good stuff there. Can you name the two cities he was referencing?
St. Louis and East St. Louis.
I was thinking, it was like, at first I was like, is he talking about Branson? I was thinking the Ozarks down there, but I guess you would consider Kansas City, right? I mean, that was the other one.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so it's funny though, because those are two huge cities and a huge pipeline of talent comes out of those areas. And you don't think about that when you think about the Mizzou Tigers. And why not? Because they've done a terrible job marketing. They've done a terrible job playing games, Mm-hmm. You create a winning program, you create a buzz. All these kids across the state are going to take a little bit more pride in their state team,
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Shane, so we had to cut this one short. So, yeah, I hope the fans got a lot out of this one. Hey, buddy, you got anything else before we hop off here?
Just real quick, man, we got those reviews at 999. So if you're sitting there and you've got that iPhone and you haven't made that rating yet, you could be the one. I appreciate everybody hanging out with us, man. We got a lot more news to come this week, and it's exciting, man. I'm pumped up, brother.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Shane, for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.